Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
Good.
We have our the most guest and the mostest demand, our Premier Ag agronomist, Glenn Longaball.
Good morning.
In the house, as the kids say.
Do you say that about all your guests?
No, just you, Glenn.
I don't.
We have you on the most about anybody.
That's because I'm the easiest to, easiest to contact.
You're a popular.
Call Glenn. He's not doing anything.
You've got like a club.
Really?
Yeah, you do.
Groupies?
Yeah, you do. I don't know if you call them groupies.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
In the traditional sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They wait outside your tour bus before you to get
that's
off
right.
Walk a field.
We do have the question of the day, though.
Great.
And this is going to be an interesting one. Ryan, come up with this one. So the question of the day is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten at work?
Yeah.
So work-related advice.
Yeah. So I've had this piece of advice numerous times, which maybe says something about me, right? So my mother started by telling me that the path to hell is paved with good intentions, right? But you know, at one time or another, I have been told this by George Waters, Dr. Beck, Dr. Brown. But I remember Dr. Brown, he said it probably the most eloquently. He's like, you know, it doesn't matter in a nutshell, right? I'm going to paraphrase this. I don't remember exactly how he put it, but I remember the nutshell, right? The nutshell is, it doesn't matter how much you know. It doesn't matter, you know, how elaborate your plans are, how much money you throw at something. It's always about implementation, right? And so at the time, we were talking about tissue sampling and getting growers on board with managing their crop to a higher level. And, you know, that sounds great, and it's really fun to do when everybody's all in.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult to implement, right? And by the way, that holds true whether you're talking about tissue sampling, whether you're talking about killing weeds, and, you know, there's always a disconnect, not always, and Premier, because you have these boundaries, right, between sales and account reps and operations, mm-hmm. right, they do a wonderful job of implementation because the people that are fulfilling the implementation are removed from the people that are making the sales or making the decisions.
Yeah. Right?
But yeah, it's all about implementation. To a farmer, it doesn't matter whether you buy 10 new pieces of equipment, right? If you can't implement, if you don't have people that know what they're doing that can make those machines all run, then you probably can't implement. And it comes into play almost every winter, right? Every winter, we oversimplify the way the spring is going to be, Ryan, right? Every winter, whenever I put my own personal crop protection plan together, I'm going to go out there sometime in March, right? In my mind, I'm going to go out there in March, and I'm going to do an early burn down, and everything's going to be smoke city. And then I'm going to come back, plant at my leisure, right? It's going to be a leisure spring of planting. And, oh, by the way, before any of it comes up, I'm going to do a pre-emerge, right? And then I'm going to come back and do an early post-emerge.
And still have time to go to the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, and still have a time to put, 500 miles on my bicycle or 1,000 miles on my bicycle through the summer. And I can tell you that it never works that way, right? It's always about implementation. And so whether we're talking about marketing programs or whether we're talking about putting your weed control plan together, it's always about creating
finishing.
Simple enough that it can be implemented, right?
That's good. All right. Ryan?
So mine didn't specifically come at work. I was working for a guy, but it was during our college time. We worked on a horse farm, and we worked for a rent when I went to school in Kentucky. And so I didn't know anything about horses, had nothing. And so the guy that owned him, he was a doctor, but he also raised these horses and fairly high dollar animals. And anyway, so I don't remember exactly what we were doing that day, but it was something I wasn't familiar with. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I didn't know how to do that. And he said, boys, you'll be fine if you just learn something every day. You've got to learn something every day. Yeah. He's like, I don't care what it is, but he said, every day you ought to come out of it with knowing more than you did when you went in. And I've always adhered to that. I've told a lot of people that, and that just sort of stuck with me that, he was an educated man and had done well for himself, and it just sort of seemed to make sense. I've received a lot of good advice through my years, but that one stuck out in my mind. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. Those are both good ones. I think mine happened. I had a boss years and years ago, and he probably wasn't one of my better ones, but he had a piece of advice that always stuck with me, and I was frustrated at work over something, and he said, "Sal, just remember what comes easy to some doesn't come so easy to others." And I never forgot that, that carries over to a lot of things. Some things are crystal clear in your own mind and maybe not in somebody else's, and sometimes you have a little more explaining that needs to be done. So,
yeah. So you're saying there's a chance I'll run across something one of these days that comes easy.
Yeah,
I hope that's right.
Yeah, I guess I want to know the context. Was he saying that you were the one that it came easy to, or the
he was saying I was in this instance. Now I'm not saying I'm always that guy. Sometimes it takes a two before, right, Ryan? But
I didn't know if he was trying to tell you you were a slow learner or whether.
No, I've been that guy before too.
Or you were trying to work with slow learners. I'm not sure which one.
I remember going back and never be the smartest guy in the room. If you're the smartest guy in the room, you need to change rooms. I have yet to ever need to change rooms.
You look around. Yeah, like, I'm okay.
I'm good here. This is my room. These are my people. go ahead, Sal. Let's see what Glenn knows today.
Well, I bet it's about fungus or bugs or aphids or something, because I saw pictures of some aphids on corn that was pretty ugly.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Can you tell us?
That's good. Sal.
Boy, that was a good one. And that's another episode. Like and subscribe.
Yeah. When you leave it that open ended, man, you got to ask me more direct questions, or I might be here for 2 hours.
Tell us about aphids on corn and why it's a problem.
Yeah. So corn aphids have really blown up this year. Probably, I'm going to say that it's been more than 10 years. Since we've had this kind of infestation of corn aphids, right? And one of the problems with corn aphids is there's not a lot of information, because most of the stuff that was written about corn aphids was prior to the millennium, right? It was from back when we did a lot of integrated pest management and that sort of thing. Thresholds were significantly different because corn's changed or the aphids have changed, it's because the metrics have changed, right? So when you, in 1981, if you came across a field that was ate up with corn aphids and you did a scouting report and sent it in, right, there was a threshold of 20 to 50 maybe aphids per plant. And it took that many because, corn was $1.60. And the insecticides were almost as expensive as they are today, right? And so, you fast forward, I often tease. I used to do this just to tease, just to bother Steve Dugosh, right, who was like the father of integrated pest management in the state of Indiana, right? That was his job in the state of Indiana for Purdue, was building these IPM programs. And I used to often tease in front of Steve Dugosh, I'd tease that integrated pest management is just dead, right? Because
I bet he
it would just make him want to cringe,
blaspheme.
But, yeah, it was just blasphemy. But I say that totally jokingly. But when you think about stink bugs and Japanese beetles and bean leaf beetles whether we're talking about green clover worms, it really doesn't matter. Most of the pests that we go after are not living by themselves in our bean or corn crop, right? Most of the time, it's a complex of pests, right? It's a multi-pest complex of critters. And oh, by the way, corn, as bad as commodity prices are today, they're still 2.5 times what they were in 1981, right? So a threshold that was written for commodity prices then and for insecticide prices at that time, which, by the way, insecticides are no more expensive today than they were in 1981, right? So at that time, it was very expensive. You had to have a really high threshold to constitute a reason to go make applications. We actually had better tools then than what we have today as far as insecticides.
Organophosphates.
So we had carbamates. We had organophosphates. We had, we still have an organophosphate. We're using Dimethoate, right? Which is, there's several different brands. There's Dimate, there's Saigon, right? There's different brands of it. But we still have that tool. What we don't have is we don't have a clopyrifos, right? We don't have Lors band, which would have been maybe a better choice. But, you know, what we've been recommending is that they use Dimethoate at, say, two-thirds of a pint to a pint. And I'd rather see it at a pint. And then we've been adding some bifenthrin or lambda-cyhalothrin. Probably haven't been putting enough in there, but that we've been making that recommendation, trying to curb them back. But, you know, in recent days, it's become, I've become more aware that our folks maybe are not as familiar with beneficials as they should be, right? And when I tease about integrated pest management being dead, I'm not talking about aphids. That is the exception to the rule, whether we're talking about, you know, soybean aphids, whether we're talking about sugarcane aphids in grain sorghum, or we're talking about corn aphids or bird cherry aphids in corn. Really, aphids are an exception to the rule. And the reason being is aphids are particularly hard to kill. It's not that it's hard to kill an aphid, but it's hard to kill all of the aphids because they're so crazy prolific, right? It's a lot like controlling some diseases like southern rust or tar spot, right? There is so many of them that it's hard to control all of them. And then the other thing that is unusual about aphids is when you don't kill them all, they tend to flare, right? They tend to come back with a vengeance. And the reason why they come back so quickly is because they, by the way, are a Hemiptera, the same as a stink bug, right? They're in that order of insect, right? So they're what we call a true bug. And so that means they go through incomplete metamorphoses. So instead of, you know, an adult laying an egg, the egg hatching into a larvae, the larvae going through a resting stage and then emerging as an adult, which then lays eggs, right? It's this four-step process. In Hemipteras, they basically go from an egg to an immature adult called a nymph. And they go through several instars, and then they're an adult laying eggs again. What makes aphids particularly damning out of that order of insect is they don't even lay eggs. They bear live young that are basically immature adults, right?
They're born ready.
They are born ready. And so their life cycle is so crazy short that if you go in without doing a little bit of reconnaissance and making sure you don't have a good population of beneficials, you can make it worse with an insecticide treatment on aphids. Right? Because what you do when you make an insecticide treatment is you kill all the beneficials off, or most of them off. Maybe you don't kill them all, but because they go through complete metamorphosis, right? So we're talking about ladybird beetle larvae. They go through complete metamorphosis. You're talking about lacewings, talking about surfeit flies, talking about hoverflies. You guys know them as corn flies, those mm-hmm. things that are driving you crazy in summertime. Those are actually a beneficial. They look like a bee. People call them sweat bees. They're not a bee. They don't have a constricted waist. They're not a hymenoptera. They're a diptera. And when dipteras lay eggs, they hatch into larvae. And when we're talking about fly larvae, there's a special name for that. Ryan, do you know what that is?
A maggot, yeah.
It's a maggot, exactly. And so I guess you got video of this, so they saw me mouthing, giving Ryan the...
He didn't give me a chance to answer.
I'll put that video up of that of the popcorn maggots from last year.
There you go.
And the tassels. But anyway...
Those maggots that you had last year, those were surfeit fly larvae, and they...
Those were the hoverfly
maggots. Those are the larvae of a hoverfly. Those are the maggots of a hoverfly. And they're typically there to clean something up. So you probably had aphids last year, and you just didn't know it because of the beneficials. Hmm. So we've got ladybird beetles.
We learned something today, didn't you?
I did.
See? Check it off.
Got that done early.
So ladybird beetle larvae, you need to know how to identify them. Lacewing larvae, right? They're a little more long and slender, but those larvae... are also really good predators. We have parasitic wasps, right? When you're looking at a population of aphids and you see these, you know, by the way, there's always aphids, which are bluish green, and then there's all these wings and cast bodies because they went through multiple instars. That's all that other crap that you see on the leaf, as well as a bunch of honeydew, which has come out the tailpipe of a aphid, right? That's the partially digested photosynthetic, you know.
He's getting better, isn't he?
Tailpipe.
He really is getting better.
Yeah.
I mean, we've really rubbed off on him.
Yeah. Sorry. I am so sorry. But so there's all this crap on the leaf. But when you see these little brown bodies that are all swollen up, that's where a parasitic wasp has basically stung that aphid, killed it, laid eggs in it, and that will be the nutrition for its emerging brood, right? Hmm. But we have assassin bugs. They're also Hemiptera, but they're not. You know, they're not parasitic on the plant. They're actually parasitic towards other insects. There's a whole plethora of them out there. And if you have those present, the thing to do is not get in a big hurry to make an application, because as their population goes up, the population of the aphids will go down. Right. So it's the one kind of exception to the rule of, man, you see insects, just go bomb them. Right. So, Sal, we have black cutworms in the spring.
Kill them.
Kill them. That's right. That was the right answer. You know, there was no hesitation. He didn't say, well, what in stars
are,
it in?
They are up to no good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
They're never here for good.
He is so well-trained. You notice he didn't ask what in star they were in. He didn't ask how many there were, you know, what the threshold was. It was none of that. It was just kill them, right? And that's kind of the way we've approached integrated pest management. But, yeah, you know, I would tell you
that. And that went out the window as my early developmental into agriculture was scouting for a seed corn company. There wasn't a lot of that either. As you find it, you sort of eliminate it.
Sure. Yeah, they may not even scout. It's about every 2 weeks. They got a schedule of fungicide and insecticide, right? That's probably not the most sustainable example.
Well, it's been 100 years ago. They're probably doing better than that. But, I mean, you didn't do a lot of counting. If you saw one, it was a mayday.
There you go. So anyway, to make a long story short, right, we have beneficials out there. We need to practice integrated pest management. It's the right thing to do, and not only environmentally, it's the right thing to do financially for our growers, right? And so, we've had to kind of go back to school, talk about beneficials, kind of pull the reins back on this instinct to want to go nuke the field really quickly, because sometimes that actually makes it worse. Because you kill off the beneficials, man, the aphids will really come back with a vengeance. By the way, once the plant flowers and the leaves are all exposed, they're exposed not just to those kind of predators, but to birds and other critters that will oftentimes put them on their heels. And typically they don't last long into August anyway, right? So these are some of the things that you learn after seeing lots and lots of seasons, right?
Yeah.
So, because we've panicked about them before. But, you know, there's other things lurking in soybean fields and corn fields. I don't know. What questions do you have?
Well, we're getting into late season soybeans, and you have told us the last time I learned something, one of those was don't give up on these soybeans.
Oh, that's an understatement, right?
So we talk about the late season management of soybeans. And I know we've had some grower meetings and you've hit on the, but just
sure.
What are we looking for now, and how do we finish strong with this? And we just got a fairly good rain across the territory. At least in the eastern part.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how west. Did you get any rain last night?
I did not. I missed those rains. Yeah. It's okay. It's okay.
Not
the deal is
you can rub it in if you want.
Yeah. But we got quite a bit of rain a couple of weeks ago for a week on and off that you guys didn't get, right? So I think everybody in the premier service area is sitting pretty good on moisture. Maybe not the most stellar crop, but it's going to be a good crop, right? I just came from I looked at a bean field before I got here this morning, and you know, it's been beans on beans, and it's got several different issues from soybean cyst nematode to spider mites to it's just got a plethora of problems because it's been bean to death on sand. And yet right down the road from it was this beautiful field of corn, right? And the corn's tasseled at about chest to maybe shoulder high, but it's high, sharp sand. And, you know, just looking at the edge of the field, I mean, the ears are enormous, right? And it looks like a really good stand. I'm sitting there going, oh, my gosh, right? It is so easy for somebody from the outside to look in and say, well, why don't you just rotate this to corn, right? Well, this is probably going to be the best corn crop that ground has ever seen by some huge margin, right? It'll probably be well in excess of 200 bushel. And normally sand is the easiest way in the world to go broke. You know, farming row crops, right?
You know, we have a lot of sand in the territory.
I know we do, but I'm talking about the highest, sharpest sand.
Oh,
right?
That, yeah.
We have a lot of really good sand here too, right? But I'm talking about those really high, sharp sand fields, right? That the reason, you know, people that don't know are critical sometimes. Why don't these growers rotate more, right? Well, they don't rotate because Most years it's a lead sinker to put those in corn, but whoever's got the corn right down the road from this is going to have just a spectacular crop. It'll rival maybe the answer plot, which has been really good. So anyway, here's what I would tell you. Normally the crop that I like to focus on is the early planted, because it without question has the highest yield potential. Most of that has already had a single shot of fungicide and insecticide, nutritionals, that sort of thing. And I think it's, you know, depending on the maturity and when it was planted, there's probably an opportunity to prop that up and maybe give it another shot, right? If we're just going into R5 or we're, say, mid R4, that's a wonderful opportunity to go in and prop it up with another pass, say, of a mid-tier fungicide, just to ensure that you don't get Cercospora. By the way, that field that we looked at this morning, there was already Cercospora showing up on the edge of the field, right? You see me digging my nails into this table, Ryan. It's because I'm thinking about the Palmer amaranth that's there and all the other issues, right? But there is certainly opportunity on the early stuff to maybe make a pass. If it's a group two soybean, probably we're getting too late to make another amendment. But certainly if we're on a 3-6 or later soybean and it's not to R5, I would consider making another application. You know, there's a lot of opportunities late planted beans, right? Oftentimes, you know, we kind of dismiss late planted beans as, you know, are we going to really invest a lot there when they probably only have 55 bushel yield potential? Well, we know from experience that sometimes double crops can yield in excess of 60 bushel, right? And so these beans that were planted maybe in May, mid-May, latter part of May, you know, they're looking a lot better. You get out in them, they've got, you know, a plethora of flowers on them. It's really be shame on us not to try to give them. Now that you got rainfall, the soil's recharged. I mean, we've got probably two and a half weeks of moisture what I'm saying is, looking forward, we probably will not see stress again on these acres that got rain overnight. They probably won't be stressed again for probably two and a half weeks, because they were not fully depleted before we got this rainfall. So that tells you that, you know, you think about not having stress for 2 weeks down the road, that means you have more yield potential. If you have more yield potential, then it's really shame on you not to think about propping that up either with nutritionals to enhance yield or fungicides, insecticides to protect yield. So, it's a wonderful time. Even these really late planted beans, I've got some June planted beans myself where I had to go in and replant because of slugs and because of, less than optimal conditions. You know, not only have I been trying to prop them up with nutritionals, but even have added things like Ascend, trying to make them more robust. Normally, you know, we talk about high-yield soybeans, it's about trying not to make them too robust. Well, these really late planted beans, got off to such a meager start, we're trying to prop them up, and it certainly is making for bigger, more vigorous soybeans.
Wow. Okay.
So it's been pretty quiet from a hurricane standpoint. We're getting late in the year. We're into July, first of August time frame. Are hurricanes going to be a problem if they come up out of the Gulf again? And what are our risks there? Besides 70-mile-an-hour winds.
So I was just thinking about putting my pocket knife back in my pocket so I wouldn't slash my wrist. Yeah, now you've made me worry about hurricanes.
Hurricanes. Right? Well, it's been quiet, so you know, there's reason to believe there may be something.
Yeah, well, I mean, hurricanes can be a double-edged sword. Hurricanes for us is obviously a good way to get moisture later in the season. Because if it weren't for hurricanes, we wouldn't normally get much weather in August and September and even into October. It almost always follows those tropical depressions that move into the Gulf of Mexico, right? That's where we typically want them. The other side of that is oftentimes what gets here is more rain than we really want. And so, you know, flooding in southwestern Indiana is pretty big. You know, southwestern, south central Indiana is a big thing. So I don't know that we want to wish for that. I'm not sure we want to wish for derechos. But, you know, if I would remind you, the last time we were in this state economically was 2020. And there was no one that forecasted that we were going to have anything but $3 corn through the fall. And I know because I sold my crop on like the eighth day of August. just to get rid of it, so I'd quit stewing about it. And on the 10th, I believe it was, is when the derecho hit Iowa. Corn took a nice jump and never really checked up after that, right? It made it into October. China stepped in, made a pretty big purchase of corn, and then the USDA corrected the carryout from like 2.1, 2 point whatever billion bushel down to about 1.97. And corn took off, and basically we have had in excess of $5 corn almost since then. So, you know, maybe, you know, some adverse rain event is what it takes to spark this market and make people believe that, you know,
well, there's a lot of wind anymore. I mean, it's just windy anymore. It just seems like that's a problem, or can be a problem.
Are you talking about the weather, or are you talking about your agronomist?
No. the weather, generally.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I thought that was code for wrap this up or something.
Up. Yeah.
No. But anyway, there's a lot of potential. You know, this corn crop, you know, we make like the corn crop's made because we tend to gravitate, right? If you're out looking at your crop, typically you go look at that earliest planted, and it's got a lot of yield potential, and we've already made at least one fungicide pass on. A lot of it's getting ready to get a second pass. But I would remind you that later planted corn that just did start flowering has got tremendous potential, right? A lot of these fields that are showing the most damage from aphids, right? That's the late planted stuff is what they're attracted to because they're a mobile pest, right? So they were attracted to those fields. They're the ones that have the big populations. You get out there and start doing the ear shake boogie. In other words, you shuck the ear back, take the last shuck off real gingerly, and then shake it to see how many of the silks have detached and what kind of pollination you've got. And what you'll find is, you know, they may only be 14 kernel rows around instead of being 16s or 18s like on the early planted, but they're still 30-some-odd, you know, sure, kernels long. I mean, there's still a tremendous potential. And, oh, by the way, those later planted crops, did we get a good stand? Absolutely, right? We typically got a better stand on those. So there's still a lot of top-end yield potential. And I guess I would remind growers, you know, they're going to get this in probably a week and a half. So thinking ahead, that's going to be almost perfect timing, right? When you're listening to this, it's going to be almost perfect timing to make an application for tar spot, right? Or for southern rust, right? Because we want it at R3, R2.5 would be great, but R3 would even be better because at R3, if you make a fungicide application, it's probably going to last to physiological maturity, or at least keep the plant clean enough towards physiological maturity that if something comes in, it can't take many bushels off before the crop gets to physiological maturity. Does that make sense?
Yep. And those would be some of the top tier fungicides at that stage?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If it's past R3, then you could probably go to a mid tier. But if you are at R2.5, I would probably use something like Veltima, a Trivapro, a Delaro, right? A Miravis Neo. One of those top tiered products would be my preference. And oh, by the way, I had a call from one of my peers up north who's right in the center of what is normally ground zero for tar spot, right? And they identified or confirmed tar spot earlier than ever before this year, right? Much like we did in southwestern Indiana last year, Gibson County had confirmed tar spot. It was like the last week of May, first week of June last year. I mean, really, really early. And yet never manifested itself into an epidemic, right? And so you think about epidemiology and you think about, you know, you got to have inoculum. Well, we had inoculum. You know, you got to have a host. And yes, we had a host. Maybe it wasn't the best host when it's in vegetative stage as opposed to reproductive. But we actually had a fair amount of time in there where we had the right environmental conditions, and yet the disease still didn't blow up. But I can tell you that when it comes to late planted crops, you change that disease triangle, right? The amount of inoculum that's out there on late planted crops when they get to reproduction is exponentially higher. And so they are at crazy risk, right? When you have really bad tar spot, or you have really bad southern rust, the fields that really take it, right, where you have those 60, 80 bushel losses or more is typically in late planted, not in early planted corn. So if you're listening to this and you've got late planted corn, in other words, here at the end of July, it just is flowering, you go 2 weeks down the road, you're going to be at R2.5, R3, and that would be an excellent time to think about hitting that and ensure, right? You may be saying, well, gee, you know, I've got $4 corn. We got a 20-cent negative basis, right? I'm in the threes, and that's without any shrink. That's without any moisture docking. I mean, these are things that keep growers awake at night. But who knows when that, you know, that tropical depression turns into a full-blown hurricane, comes into the coast of Galveston, slips up through the, you know, the central plains, and then dumps a ton of moisture on some place that really matters, like Iowa, and floods them out. I mean, that could be what it takes to get us off to the races, and then you're sitting there with, you know, 40 bushel losses from tar spot, right? So, I hate to make it sound uncertain, but that's the way agriculture is. And the only way you are, you know, the one thing you certainly can do is you can spend a little bit of money at this time of year, right? It's tough to do. I know money's tight when we get late in the season, but oftentimes that's that last dollar spent has the highest return on investment, right? And when I think about managing soybeans, I know from personal experience, as well as managing customers into the highest soybean yields that they've ever had, that it's how you finish, it's not how you start. You can have some pretty crappy, pretty thin stands as long as they are evenly distributed early on, and you manage them late in the season, and you can post some unbelievable soybean yields. I mean, just unbelievable soybean yields. So we've kind of gone from soybeans to corn back to soybeans, but there's still potential with both crops.
And it's you're right. It's hard for a grower. I mean, I was up in Decatur County last night, and with a seller, and he had an ear of corn. I mean, good ear of corn at a population of 38,000. He had sprayed it V10 and disease free. Looks really good. Did everything he was supposed to do to set up for this next application of a top tier fungicide. And now he's like, I don't think I'm going to spray it. You know, it looks good. And I'm like, oh my gosh, with the tar spot inoculum that we got out here now. And he's got a guaranteed great stand of a high population.
Yeah, that, you know what, Sal, that's pretty profound, right? We've got folks that have used either V-stage applications, or they've used something like Xyway in furrow, and they've gotten to flowering with one of the cleanest crops they've ever had. For the kind of environmental conditions we've had, you'd think we'd have lots of disease in there, and they've got one of the cleanest crops they've ever had. But I'm telling you, that's another leg on the disease triangle, right? We talked about inoculum is higher on late planted corn. Well, you need to know that the host changes, right? Corn is a terrible host for disease when it's in the V stages, right? When you're in like early grand growth, V6 through V8, right? Every bit of photosynthate that plant is producing is almost being reallocated into building what? New tissue. And so carbohydrate levels, you know, sugar levels in the plant are crazy low. And pathogens are there to try to, you know, they're an obligate parasite trying to get at that photosynthate. That's why they're there, right? It's not that they need structure. They need a photosynthate. They need an energy source. Well, think about what happens to corn and soybeans both. When they get into reproduction, the reason why some diseases never show up, right? We heard the head of pathology at Syngenta the other day talk about some diseases being late, right? These are late diseases. He's talking about southern rust, talking about tar spot. I can tell you that it's not because the diseases aren't there or that the diseases prefer to just wait until August to predispose a plant. They wait until the plant becomes a really good host, and then they multiply much more prolifically.
Wow.
That's the real story, right? It's the host is not a host is not a host. And I'm not talking about the difference between different varieties. I'm talking about even within the same variety, there's a huge gradient between the susceptibility of a corn plant when it's in V10 versus a corn plant that's at R3. When it's at R3, photosynthate levels are really high. It's an unbelievable host, and pathogens are having a party, man. It's just, you know, I tell young audiences all the time, it's like when you were in college, you know. In the V stages, it's like having a party in the middle of the afternoon with the campus police sitting out front. And whenever it gets dark and the campus police leave and the keg shows up and gets tapped, that's the way it is during R stages, right? The party is on and pathogens go absolutely crazy.
Wow. I didn't know.
Another great analogy.
That's new.
Yep, that's new.
Okay.
Anywho.
Ryan, what else?
I don't think I have anything else. I mean, we're happy back, obviously. I mean, we're in that time of year where things are going to change. We're jumping to harvest here one of these days before long, and then we're going to talk about how to residue manage and all of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Diseased plants and whatever. So I think we'll hold some of that till later.
All right. We got answer plots coming up on August 8th and 9th. If you're local around here, if you're not local, come on over and we'll be at Lagodi on the 8th and Cortland on the 9th. Invites are going out. If we don't have anything else, Glenn, thank you for joining us again.
It's my pleasure.
Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right. And if you enjoyed the episode and what we're doing, like and subscribe. And that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies.
Thanks.
Thank you all.